Greetings.
Greetings.
Wow, what an old English way to start.
Greetings, everyone. Welcome to your doom.
Now, welcome to What's for Dinner, guys. Hey. It's another fun-filled episode. I don't know that yet because the episode we just started, but I'm assuming it's going to be filled with fun. It's going to be like an eclair, like a pastry filled with fun cream. Which also sounds like the plot of a really bad porno. Like the pastry fucker. Time to fill this pastry with some fun cream. sorry. And today, I got some stuff that I want to talk about. And I'm going to be discussing it. And who knows what else will be discussed with my guest. This is actually kind of cool because this is the first return guest, not counting my wife, that has been on the show. Yeah. So hopefully the second of many return visits. It's my good friend, hilarious comic, and...
Hey, guys, it's Darren Carter.
The party starter. I was going to just let you beatbox it.
Here we go, lower.
Yeah. Aw, everybody kicking it live. Everybody kicking it live. Gonna go out, gonna... I don't know. You were doing great.
I think I'm getting better at beatboxing.
That sounded great.
It's something I started as a teenager, and I've been adding it more and more. And then I've been playing with different sounds of like, you know, I don't know if this comes across on the podcast, but like that slower beat or the lower range. And also it doubles as a Harley noise. So like kick when you go, and then you start the Harley.
That sounds great.
Like in a club, it gets the speakers rumbling and...
Yeah, well, you're hitting that low bass and everything.
Yeah, we go...
You
know, like that, and then...
Sounds like a Harley or somebody having the worst farts ever.
Or a Kawasaki 250, or just an angry cricket, you know, a cricket trying to step up his leg motion. You know, but...
Angry Cricket. You know what else Angry Cricket was?
What's that?
That was the name of the small little gun in Men in Black.
Ooh, I like that.
Yeah.
Angry Cricket. You know a lot of references.
I have a lot of just obscure references. Like when Darren came over a couple minutes ago, I forgot what exactly was said, but he said something about golden, and I said, "Stay gold, pony boy."
Yeah, and I got that one.
And he knew what that reference was. It was The Outsiders. Do you remember who played Pony Boy?
Don't.
That was Ralph Macchio.
Ralph, okay, I read that book, though.
I read the book. I think everybody was required to in school.
Were we required? Because it was The Outsiders, and then she had the other one. It was written by a 16-year-old girl, I believe, right?
The Outsiders?
Yeah. I don't think so. I think it was. Let's look it up. Excuse me, kitty cat.
Bernie, get off there. Here, I'll grab... I have the video right here.
See if it'll say who the book
is. Part of my library. Let me see. The Outsiders... Screenplay by Kathleen Knutson Rowell, based on the novel by S.E. Hinton.
Yeah, S.E. Hinton.
I think I was 16.
I think she was. Look out, Kat. I'm going to put my water there.
Birdie.
My water.
Hey. Sorry. In case you don't know, in the studio/living room, we have cats.
Do you have your iPad handy?
I do have my iPad handy.
What do you think would be faster than that? Probably pretty fast.
Probably. I'll tell you what. You look that up, and I'm gonna start talking about what was on my mind. And as a comedian, I think you might agree with where I'm going with this. But I was just watching. And Darren just saw this. I'm a sucker for Pawn Stars. I find it a very entertaining show. And I think it's of all the reality shows out there, I think it's one of the more intelligent ones. Just because you really do learn things. Might be silly things, but you learn about Pez dispensers and, you know, the people who work at the pawn shop. They're interesting people. And, you know, it's like you kind of get involved in their little world and it's cool.
Right.
But with that, I can't think of any reality show on right now that has any kind of true value in our society. And I think I'm specifically talking about the ones... Because there are a lot of them I don't watch, but like especially the ones on like Discovery and History, like the one I hate just with a feverish passion is Toddlers and Tiaras.
Yeah.
Do you ever watch that?
Yeah. My wife does. A lot of shows I see in the peripheral, like she'll be watching them just to check them out, and I'm like, what is this crap? And then
it's
the room.
Darren, it is so fucking frustrating because it's like it's like you're watching child abuse.
Is it that? Was that where Honey Boo Boo came from?
Oh,
is that where that came from? So I think that's piqued more in people's interest because they're like, what is this? And
the Toddlers and Terrors are the Honey Boo Boo.
Yeah.
Which one?
I think because I heard, I saw the Honey Boo Boo, what do you call it? The promo.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, wow, this is, that, it was actually kind of funny, you know? And,
oh, it's just, it's so, it's so fucking sad.
It is.
This, oh, wait, but I'm sorry, I'm trying to.
Yeah, I'm not really into like the little kids getting, you know, trying to be, you know, queens and princesses and stuff. It just, I don't know, there's something, I don't, it's kind of gross.
It's incredibly gross.
Yeah.
But it's, what's more annoying and frustrating is the fact that the parents, they're the ones who are pushing their, it, would you ever do that to your kids? Would
got,
you ever?
I got the S.E. Hinton thing. Oh. If you ever no, I would not. I would not. What do you got there? S.E. Hinton.
Became a hell, oh my God, you're right. Wow, because it says, still in her teens, Hinton became a household name as the author of The Outsiders.
Wow.
Still in her teens. During her freshman, it was published during her freshman year of college in 1967. Wow. I stand corrected.
Wow, I'm like an idiot savant. I don't know shit about anything, but I knew
you're
like,
you are.
S.E. Hinton, Outsiders. I never saw the movie, but she was 16. It got published her freshman year.
Yeah. Definitely wrote The Outsiders at 16. Yeah.
Yeah,
we'll talk about that in a second. Because we're on this this Honey Boo Boo thing.
Oh yeah.
But would you ever do that to your kids?
No.
I mean, honestly, do you,
no,
like pushing your kids. Like I think it's one thing if like maybe the kids like say, oh, I want to do that. I want to be a beauty pageant, and then they get into it, and the parents are like, oh, this okay, fine. And especially if the mother's like some frustrated old model or old beauty queen or whatever.
Yeah.
But then if it seems like a lot of the times the kids just hate it. They're crying, and they're, you know, they just don't want to do
it. The parents are like, come on, get in there, do it. You know,
exactly.
And I mean, not to be mean, but sometimes the parents look like they haven't taken care of themselves physically.
Like Honey Boo Boo.
Yeah.
Have you seen that woman? She looks like Rocky Dennis with 300 pounds on her.
Yeah. And then, you know, and then, and it's just like, that little Honey Boo Boo cleans up nice, though. Like, I saw her just running around the carnival or whatever. And then, but then when she's ready, when it's showtime, I'm like, you know, wow, like they put makeup on her and get her all
You could slap me. You could put a bow, a silk bow on a piece of shit. It's still a piece of shit, you know?
By the way, never mind. Keep going.
No, what? What?
It was a bad transition. Because I was,
speaking of shit.
No, but before that, with the putting the makeup on kids, before I came over here, my son, I had this little sore in my head, so I covered it with some cover up a little bit.
Okay.
And my son, he's 4 years old. He goes, I want to put makeup on. I go, you don't have any bumps. He goes, I have a bump right here. And he pretended he had a bump on his forehead. So I was like, oh, okay. Then I thought, oh, I got something better. So I grabbed my wife's eyebrow pencil and I gave him a mustache and a beard. And it kind of looks like yours, like that thin, like that. It actually does, like that thin, but I made it thinner, like the thin.
Like the John Waters kind of.
Yeah, a little bit like that.
You want him to look gay and Jewish? Good.
Three, like a Three Musketeers look, like the little like
D'Artagnan.
I gave him that in the front, and then the little. And he's like, he's all proud of himself. He's like, I'm a man now.
You know, so I did something like that, and I actually have a picture of it somewhere. Yeah. When I was in high school, I was a freshman, and we were taking an acting course, and they had this day of like makeup.
Yeah.
And somebody wanted I think it was supposed to be old age makeup.
Uh-huh.
And so, like, they drew lines on me and, like, painted a beard and a mustache. And it looked like shit, but I thought it was, like, so cool that I didn't wash it off for the entire day. I went through school with that on.
Yeah,
I just love getting attention. And, I have a picture of it. When I got home, I took a picture.
Who's that senior? The new senior?
Oh, no, I was a freshman.
Yeah. That's what I mean. You know, I mean, like, a senior. Yeah.
Who's that? No, it was more like, who's that weird fucking kid with with makeup on?
Yeah.
With a fake... does he think it's real?
Does he think he's fooling people? You're like making up old people problems. Oh, my back. Yeah.
Who has their algebra? Algebra, I've got bursitis. I don't think I can handle algebra. Yeah. Not with my back. My school actually did this thing where it was Dress as Your Favorite Author Day. And, you know, some kids were coming as like, or it was an author or a character from a book, something like that.
Yeah.
And
that's good they give you an out, because at that age, you know, like, what authors are there? Stephen King.
Yeah, it's, you know, like, it's how, like, do you address a Stephen King or Shakespeare? So it might have been characters from books.
Yeah.
So I went as a, because I'm a huge Weird Al Yankovic fan. And he had written a book, like a, it was an autobiography, but it was kind of like a spoof autobiography. It wasn't really real. Yeah. So I dressed as Weird Al, but I dressed as Weird Al from the music video Fat. If you remember that music video?
Yeah.
So basically I had like black sweatpants and my dad's black members only jacket to look like the video. And I stuffed pillows down the leg of the pants.
Did? That's how you did it? Yeah.
And pillows in the gut. And I had like towels wrapped around my arms under the jacket to make me just look fat. And I drew a mustache on. And I went to school like that.
Yeah.
I walked around school.
Did people get it right away?
I don't think so. I think, because you know what, also a lot of kids, a couple of kids dressed up as the Fat Boys, if you remember them.
Yeah.
Talking about human beatbox.
The Fat Boys are back.
Also, great movie, Disorderlies, from the
80s.
So some people thought I was supposed to be part of that group. I'm like, no, I'm my own fat guy. I'm Weird Al from Fat. And then our campus had off-campus lunch, our school had off-campus, so you can leave school and go get lunch.
Who's
like
fat?
Exactly, yeah. And there was this pizza place, like maybe 6 blocks from the school that all the kids would go to.
Yeah.
I walked to the pizza place in Florida in all that humidity.
Oh,
just because, again, I love getting attention. That's why I became a comic, I think.
You're all hot, these sweaty pillows in your clothes.
Then I was like, people know me now. I'm the fucking guy. Weird guy.
Yeah. That's so funny. You're into Weird Al. I am too.
Did you ever see that?
What is it? Oh, it's cool.
It's a Weird Al. We have a Weird Al Picasso-like picture poster hanging in our apartment.
It's really cool.
It is pretty cool. We call it Picasso.
Yeah, Weird Al, he's one of those guys. I mean, you're obviously a bigger fan than I am. Not that I'm not a fan of his, but, you know. Like,
get the fuck out of here. If you're not a fan of Weird Al, at least as much as me, you got to get the fuck out.
Yeah, you know. But people that know, sometimes you demand to be called Weird Flip.
Actually.
Is this true? I just made that up.
No. You're not far off. When I was younger, when I was in middle school.
Yeah.
Huge Weird Al. I'm still a big fan today, but when I was a kid, I was, like, obsessive. And they had a talent show every year at this school, and I love, you know, I mean, from a young age, I love performing. So I actually performed by lip syncing to one of Weird Al's songs. And I'm not sure if you know my real name. Do you know my real
name? No, I don't. I mean, I probably do. Once you say it, I might go, oh, yeah, or I might not.
Okay, to anybody out there who's listening, who've always wondered what my, because my, you could, if you really wanted, you can go online and find it. My real name is Philip. And when I was in middle school, when I went to the talent show, I went under the name Crazy Philip Schultz, like Weird Al Yankovic.
Yeah.
But I called myself CPS.
CPS, Child Protective Service.
God, I never even realized that.
Because I'm weird.
That's funny. Yeah. No, CPS. But and actually I did Fat my eighth grade year in the talent show, but I was known as CPS, Crazy Philip Schultz, because I didn't want to be Weird Philip Schultz. I thought I'd be hacking Weird Al. So I was Crazy Philip Schultz.
Well, that's good. Even back then, you were like, I want to be original. And I really, gosh, what were some of the first songs that I remember from Weird Al? Another One Bites the Dust?
Oh, yeah. Dude,
Bites the Dust.
I could tell you every song on every album.
Tell me some of the earlier ones, because that's when I first.
That first album he had.
Another One Bites the Dust.
Here's the track listings. Okay. Ooh, Ricky. Shit.
Oh, Ricky. Really? That was, oh my God, that was a huge song.
Ricky, Got a Boogie, original.
I don't know if I don't know. Yeah, I don't think I know
that was
that
an original.
I might know it if I heard it. But.
Oh, my God. What was after it? Ricky, Got a Boogie. Okay, these might go out of order now.
I thought those were later on, but they weren't.
Uh-uh.
Oh, gosh.
Another One Bites the Dust. Another One Rides the Bus. Buckingham Blues. Stop Dragging My Car Around, which is Stop Dragging My Heart Around parody.
I Love Rocky Road.
I Love Rocky Road. Mr. Frump and the Iron Lung.
Don't know that one.
Is an original. The Checks in the Mail. Such a Groovy Guy. And I think there was one more. Ricky, Rocky Road, Stop Dragging My Car Around, Another One Rides the Bus. Oh, I think there's one more parody. I can't remember it. Fuck. Whatever. Those were the big ones from the early years.
Then I found through Dr. Demento.
Oh, I love Dr.
Demento. Is that how you got into Weird Al Yankovic?
No, I got into Weird Al years ago when that album first came out. I saw Ricky, the video, on USA Up All Night, if you remember that show. I think Rhonda Shears was the host.
Yeah.
And I was just, God, I must have been 8, maybe 7,
Oh, Lucy, I'm home.
Yeah.
And I saw this and I just like, this guy is awesome.
Yeah.
He's making fun of, like, I knew Mickey. Yeah. I knew that song, and I loved that he was...
I love the Mickey song, and I love the parody. I love everything he's done, I've loved.
He's brilliant, and he's so prolific because he really... He started... That first album came out in 82 was the album's release, but he released a single of another one by... Another one... My Bologna. That was the other song.
Bologna. That's it. My Bologna.
He actually released that as a single with Capitol in, like, 79, 80.
Wow.
So he already kind of had some little heat on him, but his first album was 82, and it's now 2012, so it's 30 years later, and he's still releasing albums. He's in the studio now recording a new one.
Wow.
So that's just how prolific and relevant he's maintained himself.
Yeah, because I maybe had not really forgotten about him, but he's a little bit off my radar until what was it? A Gangster's Paradise. Amish Paradise. I love that one.
That was off Bad Hair Day from 96.
Yeah, see, that was... What did he have?
such random information.
Did he have some stuff out? I'm sure he did, like, in the early 90s.
Oh, yeah.
But see, I was probably at that age 93. Where I was not really thinking about
it. Well, 92 was a Nirvana one.
Oh, yeah, that's
right.
It was
like Nirvana.
Yeah,
was
you're
92.
Right. You're right. That's right. Yeah.
And then 93.
Oh, the Red Hot Chili Peppers one.
Right. And Bedrock Anthem. That was 93 off Alapalooza. Mm. And that also had Jurassic Park. Those were the two singles released off that. And then he kind of got into this thing of releasing a new album like every 3 or 4 years. So then after Alapalooza 93 was Bad Hair Day 96 with the Amish Paradise, then Running with Scissors in 99 with the Star Wars one and the All About the Pentiums.
All About the Pentiums. By the way, I told you this before. I'm in both those videos. Did I tell you that?
Yes, of course. Yeah, yeah, oh, my God.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
Okay, this is a cool thing about Darren Carter. Darren Carter, I had before I think I ever even met you, I knew of Darren from those two videos.
That's cool.
No, it's very cool, and because that to me, that's I would love to have that feather in my cap. That's one of the ultimate coolest things. Darren is the one of the techie nerd guys in Pentiums who ends up drooling and foaming at the mouth.
Yeah, they gave me. He was so nice on the set too. They give you some Alka-Seltzer to kind of make the. Mm-hmm. They give you half an Alka-Seltzer and you add a little bit of water, then it looks like you're foaming at your mouth.
Yeah. How many takes of that did you have to do?
Probably like three.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, but still, you're there all day, and then you know you're doing the whole in the pit dancing scene, like at the rock concert.
And it was you and the that black guy that were in both videos, right?
Yeah,
I can't remember his name.
But yeah, there's a lot of comedians in that. And Murray Valeriano was also in the All About the Pentiums, I think. No, or in the Star Wars one.
I don't think I know him.
Yeah, there was a lot of comedians. I forget who they are though, but. Yeah.
That's so cool.
I should probably
watch those videos again.
Yeah,
just
be like, I remember them.
To see if I know anybody.
And that was the first time I'd ever seen Weird Yankovic kind of changing his look a little bit, where he looked a little bit like a regular.
Yeah, yeah.
Like
he took off the glasses. Yeah, and the mustache.
Yeah, yeah. He got rid of the glasses, mustache, and the curly hair on that one. On that video is when he had like the longer hair. And,
yeah, yeah. No, he still has that look.
And he had like a rock star look, and like the girls on set were like, "Whoa, Weird Al Yankovic! Whoa, like, they're really like he's really hot." You know.
Well, that's the thing. Like he is kind of Madonna-ish.
Yeah.
Remember Madonna would always change her look and everything?
Yeah.
He maintained that kind of that Weird Al look with the Hawaiian shirt.
The mustache, the Hawaiian shirt.
And just only changed that one little thing. But as far as like, he was very smart to know that he has to sell himself comedically, not like the girls find him all hot and everything.
Yeah.
And I think that was a very, very clever thing to do. It's like a lot of female comics I've met... A female comic I met, Mary Ellen Hooper.
Yeah.
Do you know Mary Ellen?
Yeah, yeah.
She told me a long time ago when we were working together that she dresses down on stage. She wears kind of very, like, not frumpy, but just, like, very...
long skirts.
Long skirts and, you know, sweaters. And she said she does that because she doesn't want anybody to look at her and judge her on her look. They want her just to hear her jokes.
Yeah, I guess sex sells, but not in stand-up. Or maybe it does. I don't know.
It does.
I think it does now, right? I mean, does it? I don't know.
Yeah, Dane Cook.
Yeah,
He used his look to definitely sell himself. As far as the, he's a good-looking guy. He was, built.
But
and
he's made it even better. Like when you look at the pictures of him, they smooth out all the dimples.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
So you're like, yeah.
Yeah, and a lot of female comics do it. You know, a lot of. I'm not going to say any names, but I can. Think of a couple of females who are relying more on their looks than their comedy.
I totally picture, we won't say a name, but right when you said that, I don't know, it's probably a different person, but it could be the same person. But this person, this woman is, her looks are really helping her, like, especially like online marketing, like her photos are amazing, her posters are wild. There's big shows back east. I won't say what shows because it might give out too much details, but they promote her. They're like, so-and-so will be in the studio, and they keep promoting her even after she's long gone. And
you know, it's funny. I can think of three girls off the top of my head that I think you're talking about.
Yeah. There's no camera, right?
No, there's no camera.
Okay, does one of the headshots look like this? Like a particular... And it says, and she's like... Oh.
Does she have...
Yeah. That's smart, though.
It is. You know? It is.
Yeah.
It is. No, she... And she's also funny.
Yeah, exactly. Like, yeah, you know, she's funny. Yeah.
But I mean, seriously, like... But there are a couple female comics out there who... Put it that way, this person we're talking about, I don't think she would have gotten the attention she's gotten had she not been as attractive as she is.
Yeah. No, it's... Hey, you know what? Sometimes life isn't fair.
You know? I know.
Because you could be twice as funny. Me and you could be twice as funny as, you know... Hey, but...
We are. we are. Let's just...
Yeah. But it's like, but these, you know, these male DJs or these guys, they're like, yeah, so hey, Flip's coming by, you know, that's great. But I mean, come on, it's just like, if this hot, beautiful chick, you know, they're like, yeah, let's book her.
Oh, yeah.
At least once, right? They want to book her at least once.
Yeah, yeah. And it's, again, you put that.
And if you do, if they do good, then they'll book them back.
Yeah. You know? No, but it's easier to get your foot in the door with that kind of thing.
Yeah.
By the way, I like how we went from Weird Al to hot chicks.
Yeah. We're still teenagers at heart.
We are. Actually, but I wanted to, just before we go too far off the Weird Al thing, so you being in both of the videos, I remember, and I think I have this somewhere on one of the DVD releases of the videos that I have, part of the trivia, you're actually in the trivia.
Oh,
because
cool.
They said, like, either how many or which actors appeared in both videos album. And it's you and that other guy.
I remember I ran into Weird Al Yankovic somewhere, and he told me that at the rap party, my scene in, I think, Pentium's got a really big laugh. And that was nice of him to come, like, just to remember that and to tell me.
That's cool.
That was cool.
No, he's very... I've got to tour with him a few times.
That's cool.
And, yeah, his drummer and I, Bermuda, are pretty good friends. We're actually meeting next week for lunch.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, no, it's cool. And so now it's like, whenever...
He's had those same musicians for a long time,
right? His entire run. The band has the only...
And they're like real musicians. It's like real thing, you know?
Well, I mean, if you think about it, I forgot who... I think Ben Folds said this about Al and his band specifically, is that the band, they have to play every style that he parodies. They're not just a rock band or a classical. Any song that he parodies, they have to play it pretty much note for note in the same way it's played. Like, from Nirvana to Miley Cyrus to Joan Jett. Different genres, different styles.
White and Nerdy is White and Nerdy. Freaking good, man.
Oh my god, so amazing! It's like
the way he's rapping fast and everything makes sense, and the video matches the funny lyrics. It's like it's so good.
No, he's fantastic, and a really sweet guy too. Like I don't have to tell you that. Like last time I saw him was at a concert in Orlando, I think almost a year ago. And I got my brother and I'm sorry, not Orlando, Fort Lauderdale. And I happened to be in town, so the drummer hooked me up with a couple tickets. I took my brother. We went backstage.
Yeah.
And Al comes out, does a little meet and greet, sees me, and goes, oh, hey, Flip. And he gives me a big hug. I'm like, holy shit. This is really fucking cool.
Wow. Now, when you did some shows with them, did you go out and do like 15 minutes to kind of warm up the crowd? And then
I think I did, if I remember correctly, like 20, 25.
Oh, yeah.
It was a long set.
And the crowd's into it.
You know what's funny?
Or
the
not.
First, well, no. Let's say you're going to see a band and then they have the opening act.
Yeah.
Are you going to sit there going, oh.
Right.
Or are you going to be like, yay, the opening act. You're like, fuck, I want to see Weird Al.
Yeah. And usually the circumstances aren't as good. Like the sun, if it's an outdoor thing, the sun's still kind of up.
Yeah. No, I never did an outdoor thing with him. It was always like in theaters.
Where the people looking at you like, why isn't this guy singing? Why,
yeah. That's the other thing too.
Yeah.
But actually the very first time I opened for him, it was it was in 1999 at the Hard Rock Live in Orlando. Mm. Excuse me. And I remember I went out there, and within 2 minutes, somebody yelled out, we're not here to see you. We're here to see Al.
I know.
Gosh. And I didn't let it bother me. I just kept going. And by the end of it, I had the whole crowd.
Yeah.
It was a very cool feeling. And then the next couple times I opened for Al, the crowds were great. Just really, really great.
I know.
It was fun, man. Have you ever opened for anybody like really, really big?
Yeah. I opened for you once.
Not talking about in the bedroom, Carter.
Hey, I'm
talking
about hello. Okay, how do you think hello. I got this rebooking on this podcast?
Swallow.
I opened for. Let's see. We'll start with some of my musical people that I opened for. I've been doing comedy 3 months. And they had a
really?
Yeah,
wow, 3 months. I would have thunk you'd been doing it 5 based on your act right now. Yeah. Oh, you mean back then?
Yes, back then. I started in July.
What year was this? Where's your you're just started?
July 9th, 19th. This is funny. Should I it's so before I will tell you the truth, but it's funny when you're a kid and you're like, you know, 5 and a half, you're like, I'm 6, or you want to kind of, you know, go up. And then as you get older, like, you know, some women will be like 38 forever, mm-hmm. you know. And I noticed with comedy, it's kind of like, it's a weird thing. Like after, because I've been doing comedy over 20 years, and I'll have a great set somewhere, and, you know, not that they're all great, but, you know, okay, they are. No, but I'll have a great set, you know, or whatever, a good set that the audience thinks is great. And I'll notice like some comedians might walk up and go, man, that was really good. Like, how long have you been doing this? And when you say 20 years, it doesn't really go anywhere. The conversation goes nowhere after that. They're just like, oh, awesome. Because I think they want to think like, oh, I've been doing it 3 months, or, you know, or not 3 months, but like, you know, 6 years. So maybe they feel like, oh, maybe I'll be that, you know, good in 6 years. But when you say 20 years,
yeah,
they're like, God, it takes a long time. And also, how come I haven't heard of you in 20? Fuck. 20 years, I never heard of you. Like, I don't know. Is that what they're thinking? I don't know what they're thinking.
I'd like to think they're not thinking. Because this is my 20th year, too. December will be like, mark the day of my 20th year, or my first time going on stage 20 years ago.
Do you find yourself doing the math where you're like, well, I've been doing it 20 years, but I didn't do it full time
like
till about 7 years ago, and you know,
seven
or whatever, you know, like.
No, I did 13 years of open mic, then I decided to take it seriously.
Eating Top Ramen, having 5 roommates. You know, I was just fucking around, you know.
I figured, man, maybe all the guys. At year 10, I'm like, nah, not yet. No, you know, if somebody asks me how long I've been doing it, I'll give them that option. I'll go, like, altogether or full-time. And if they say altogether, I'll say this is my 20th year, like, literally from my first open mic. But when I started going full-time in August of 97.
August of 97. So I was married in August of 97.
Oh, my God. Congratulations.
August 25th.
Oh, so you're...
Which is a Monday.
You just had your anniversary.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Yeah, 15 years.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And you going on a year and a half. A year.
Hit a year in July.
A year in July. That's
yes.
right.
Yes. So got some catching up to do.
Yeah.
Mm.
The first time I hit the stage was July 9th, 1988.
88.
Yeah.
Wow.
July, there was like 5 people in the crowd, so I didn't. I didn't do it again. I didn't do it again until. I must have been doing it longer than 3 months.
Because you just said 3 months is when you did something big.
Yeah. That's weird. Okay, I take that back. I did comedy maybe a little bit longer than 3 months, but not that much longer. So I did it in July. I didn't do it again until December, which is weird. And then I started getting regular gigs, I think, in 89, like around town, which was Fresno. And I did it there for about a year before I moved to the Bay Area. And that's really where my, you know, more stuff took off, because there's more opportunities and more clubs and stuff. But, yeah, I've been doing comedy for maybe, gosh, I don't know, less than a year. We'll say less than a year. And there was a contest to open up for the New Kids on the Block.
Shut the fuck up.
Yeah, when they came through Fresno, yeah. And I won the contest. And looking back, I probably won the contest because, you know, you only got to do 3 minutes, and I had no instruments or backup dancers, and they're like, okay, just let this guy go out and do his thing.
So you did 3 minutes opening for New Kids?
Yeah, and it was fucking hard. It was horrible. It was like, most of the crowd was 12 and under, and the majority was like 9 and 10, and they're just screaming the whole time, and I messed up because, that old pattern, that formula of like, you know, we're going to do, you know, like you know, the Wizard of Oz with an all new cast.
Yeah.
And then you replace. So that was kind of this is back in the 80s. So I was like, basically, I was just trying to get. Here's what I was trying to get to. Okay. This is my very. I used to rap in high school. So I was going to basically do this. I was going to open up with a couple of jokes and then do this rap. And the rap was like, it goes, if I can remember, boom, 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 well, blows me down. I couldn't be hipper. Shiver me timbers. I'm a Chippendale stripper. Kermit the Frog, and I'm covered in green. Miss Piggy is fat. That's F-A-T, but it's my prerogative, which was a big Bobby Brown song at the time. And my name is Bull Winkle. I'm a moose. Give me the mic and I could lose. You know, and I would do these cartoon impressions and, you know, bullshit like that. And it was cute coming from a teenager, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So
You should open with that now. I would love it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would love to see you do that now.
Yeah, especially like at Jay Davis's room, like the parlor on Melrose where the crowd's like so young, they have no idea what the fuck I'm doing.
You're talking about.
And my name was Bull Winkle. And they're like, what are you doing?
What the fuck is Bull Winkle? Is that like a new sex thing? Oh my God, he gave me a little bullwinkle last night. Woo!
Yeah. So I am.
So you did 3
nothing
minutes.
Nothing up my sleeve, presto. No. Yeah. So I.
That's funny.
So I go out there and I go, it's great. I go, hi guys, I'm Darren Carter. It's great. No, actually, the way I opened up was I used to go, was my opening joke. I would pretend to be a character when I first did. I'd go, hi, I'm Darren Carter, the party starter. And then I would talk really fast. I memorized this whole thing. I forget how it goes, but it was something like, throwing down and throwing up, lick a poo, I'm through. Look out, streets, my feet are about to hit you. And a bicycle, whatever. And it was basically like a ripoff of like a radio DJ, you know,
like a pitch man, like a fast.
Yeah. It was like a, and then I would go, and then I would break character and be like, this guy's looking at me like, fuck. I hope he doesn't talk like that for the whole show. Anyways, and then I would just, it was just like some little, and it was really, you know, it was something, and it worked like 80% of the time, and then it would bomb 20% of the time. Because the idea is
it's a good ratio, though.
Yeah, I mean, or maybe it'd bomb even more. I don't know. I mean, the idea was that I'd walk up and I'd look really nervous, like that was my shtick. You know, like they'd introduce me and I'd walk to the stage and act all nervous, like, and look all nervous, and then which sometimes backfire because people would be like, "Come on, you can do it."
Yeah.
Because a lot of the places you're playing at that level are open mics anyway, so I probably look so nervous. And then I'd grab the mic. Hi, everyone. My name's Darren Carter, and I'd whatever, and so. Yeah, so I think I opened up with that bit, and that didn't, like, whatever. That didn't really go either way. Like, they liked it, they didn't like it, I remember. The next joke, as I said, I was the winner of a Bart Simpson lookalike contest. And this is back when I used to mousse and spike my hair up really high. And
you had the Claude Stewart look?
Yeah, basically, the Claude Stewart look, which he does now. But I was doing back in 87, 88, you know. And I'd hit the side profile. I look like Bart Simpson. Oh, I hit the face, you know, get a big laugh. And then I go, I won $1,000. I'm really excited. I won $1,000. I was the winner of a Bart Simpson lookalike contest. And I do the face. They'd laugh. And then I'd say, but the money's gone. The contest is over. And I still look like Bart Simpson. And they'd laugh. And then I'd go to my Popeye rap. And I tell the audience, I go, I love the New Kids on the Block. And the girl's like, yeah. I go, it's great to be opening up for the New Kids on the Block. Yeah. But I say we should replace them with an all-new cast.
Boo.
No, seriously, guys, gotta hear me out. Just keep booing me. Which boo me and be like,
boo.
No, we'd have Popeye, and then we'd have Bullwinkle. Oh, shit. Kermit the Frog,
you
and I'm Kermit.
Suck.
Well, blows me down.
Where's Donnie?
All right, guys, that's it. That's my time. Thank you.
Thank boo. God. Boo.
Blows me down. And I just walked off going, fuck, this is like so. I was in tears, man. Like, it was awful.
Oh, no, you got a. You got your wings early, though, man. Going in front of a crowd that big at such a young age, comedically.
Oh yeah,
that's pretty balls, man.
It was.
I don't think I could have done that. Only a year into.
The one that got me hooked into comedy is one that I did on campus at Fresno State. It was at the Bucket, and it was a college crowd. And there's something about that. Do you remember the first time you actually got a great reaction? The first time you killed.
I mean, yeah.
It's such an addiction. It's
better than any drug.
I mean, some of those early. It's funny as we get older and the longer you're in it, you get more critical or you like bits. You're like, oh, that was good. Or I shouldn't have done this. Or I shouldn't. Mm. But those early stages, it's great. It's almost like a staircase where you're like, you kind of plateau, and then a couple months go by, and then you're like, whoa, I'm better now than I was 2 months ago.
Oh,
and then another week goes by. Oh wow, I get it now. Yeah, you know. You move the mic stand away from the, you know, you don't block. What am I doing blocking?
Blocking myself. That's how you can, whenever I'm at a club and I'm with somebody and I see somebody do that, I go, you know how you could tell this person is pretty new to comedy? Left the mic stand right in front of them.
Mm-hmm.
Takes focus away. You got to move the mic stand aside and behind.
Yeah, little things like that.
Yeah, exactly. But I'm sorry, continue.
You know. Oh, so anyways, like that, just that early rush of getting those big laughs, and that's when you just get addicted to it, and you're like, this is what I want to do.
Mm.
I want to do this. So you asked me what groups I opened for. So the New Kids was the worst experience. It was really bad. I was really gun-shy after that about opening it for any, you know, as anybody would, any musical acts. But I had a friend who I went to high school with who went on to have a number one song, and it was called Timmy T. His name is Timmy T, and the song was called One More Try. It was One More Try. It's been a long time since I've seen Something like that.
Oh, yeah.
Living all these lonely nights without you. Oh, baby, couldn't we give it one more try?
It's familiar, yeah.
It was when the first Gulf War broke out. Like, that was the time frame for back then. But
was it a pro-Gulf War song?
No.
Give it one more try?
No, it was like a breakup love song, you know. But it was funny because he even beat, like, Whitney Houston, like, that week. You know, like, that.
Really?
It was like he was number one, like, Billboard top 100. Like, wow. So he asked me to do an open for him for a couple of shows, and I was like, ew, no. Okay, I'll do it. And But at this point, I had been, you know, done comedy a lot long, couple more years, and opened for some more teenagers, which, you know, they were in the audience. But they were a little older than the new kids, and it actually went a lot better, but still wasn't great. But I didn't really get good at opening for bands until I realized, like if the audience is older, they're just in a regular older audience. You're gonna do good, you know. You're gonna do, maybe, you know, you might not go as well as if they're there specifically for comedy, but, you know, I've got to open for, I opened for Rick Springfield a couple of times.
Oh, that's cool.
And the audiences are great. I mean, it's, you know, cougars. It's women in their 30s.
Was that outdoors or indoors?
Both were. No, one was indoors and one was outdoors.
Okay.
Yeah, and he was a really nice guy, and he was great, man, and his audiences were awesome.
Very cool.
Who else did I open for? Dionne Warwick.
That was, really?
That was cool. That was at a military place in Colorado. I think it was on the base. There was a lot of, like, the officers were there.
Wow.
And you see, like, an orchestra, and it was, like, that kind of vibe. What else did I open for? Yeah.
I auditioned. I opened for Paul Anka.
Oh, yeah?
One time. I think it was, like, probably the same basic crowd that you had for DM. Yeah. Well, no, if you were doing military, this was upstate New York somewhere. Very, very weird, though, for me. Mm-hmm. It was, like, maybe 27 or so, I kind of knew who Paul Anka was, but I knew my material did not relate to this audience, really.
Wow,
except for some basic stuff. So it was, I don't know, did you find that weird, like, trying to relate to an older crowd, like, coming to see that?
Her audience is definitely older. The Rick Springfield audiences were really just, they were perfect. My material was perfect for that, you know, like, I was even doing the Snoop Dogg stuff, but I was like, you know, it's not like people or only listen to one genre. You know, a lot of times they flip around, and they may love, you know, Weird Al Yankovic, but then sometimes they turn, you know, Metallica or something. So they're not like, I don't get it. What's he doing Snoop Dogg for? This is dumb. You know, no, they.
That doesn't sound like Donnie at all.
Yeah,
I'm still the New Kids. I'm the New Kids fan in that joke too. No matter what audience, I'll still be the New Kids fan.
Yeah,
bring on Donnie.
Yeah, but
So what was the so would you say the biggest name that you've opened for?
Biggest name, comedically, I don't know, maybe like Tracy Morgan, maybe.
Really?
I guess, probably.
I would think, Tracy's pretty big, but I would think you maybe hit some bigger ones.
Paul Rodriguez, yeah.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Oh, no, Mike Epps, probably Mike Epps, maybe that. Because we did some big, Cheech Marin.
Oh, that's cool.
Him. Yeah, that was good, too.
That's cool.
The biggest venues were, well, gosh, I don't know, they're all,
Did you smoke pot with him?
No. No, he didn't even. He smoked pot, I think, afterwards. You know what I learned from Cheech? Like, not to be afraid of people and their germs, I guess. It's weird. Like, have you ever, like, gone through a phase where you get weird about, like, shaking of hands and then eating, though? Like, let's say you're eating pizza, and then you just washed your hands, and then people come up and shake your hand, and then now you're like, fuck, I got to go wash my hands again.
I would usually fist bump.
Yeah. I noticed, because I was going through this phase where I was, like, carrying Wet Ones and Purell and, you know, like, I'm going to eat French fries. Oh, this son of a bitch just shook my hand. Oh, I got to go wash my hands again. But Cheech was, like, eating pizza, and he would, like, shake people's hands and go back to his pizza. And I'm like, yeah, you know, maybe I've been overthinking this whole germ thing, you know.
Yeah, I mean, some people are germ.
It's kind of freeing to, you know.
Let it go.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I could imagine. Yeah. Like,
I mean, of course, I'll wash my hands, but I'm like, I'm not going to, I try not to be so, yeah.
You want to know what's the, like, I would, like, whenever I would go to the bathroom and I do number two, I'd always wash my hands with soap and shit.
Yeah.
But whenever I'd piss, I'd just, like, get my hands wet. And then that was it.
Yeah.
And I was like, eh, whatever. And then after I got married, Allison, she sees me do this. She goes, you didn't use soap. I go, it's only piss. She goes, you touched your dick and you got piss on your hands. And now you're not going to even wash them. It takes an extra second to put soap. And I'm like,
yeah.
You know, she's right. I got, like, I just touched my dick and I got piss. I'm like, ew, yeah.
Yeah.
So now it's like, I can't not wash my hands whether I... Beer, but I can't believe I went that long not realizing that.
That's what women are.
Gross.
Women are really.
It's a little gross.
Women keep us, you know. They make us. They make us human beings again. You know, it's like when you're single and you have the, you just do whatever, and then
I'm finding that, dude. I mean, like, I've been married just over a year, but we've been together almost four, and it's the longest relationship I've ever had in my life. And it's only her longest relationship was 6 years. So everything that I'm experiencing new for the first time, she's like been there, done that. And I commend her for being so patient with me, because I'm like, what the fuck? And she goes, this is what a relationship is. You gotta sometimes you just gotta say okay and blah blah blah. And yeah, she's keeping me like she is getting me, because I've been at bachelor mindset for so long.
Yeah,
it's still even to this day difficult for me to. I hate saying this, but to truly feel like a partnership. Mm-hmm. Does that sound awful?
No.
How long did it take for you to really, like, accept that it's not just it truly isn't you anymore? It's like. When you think of anything, you automatically consider somebody else, as opposed to going, oh, this could be fun. Oh, wait a minute, no, I think I have a plan. I think we have plans for that.
Yeah, you know? I don't remember exactly because it's been so long now. But you're right. There's certain dates, like, you know, I would get offered a date in June, and I would be like, sure. And then I'd hang up the phone, and then my wife would be like, that's my dad's birthday. We're going to leave town and go. And I'm like, oh shit.
Yeah.
But then it just becomes second nature to where you're like, okay. Whenever it's, you know, these particular dates, I know that, you know, we're going to have plans, family plans. And some we'll work around it. Like, you know, if you're offered,
but how long did it take for you to, like, really feel like a unit? Because I'll be honest, like, and Allie and I have argued about this, but it's my own fault. I still think of, this sounds awful, I still think of myself, not as single, but still with that single man mentality, that mindset that, again, you know, this affects me. Oh, yeah, somebody else, too. You know, as opposed to going, this affects us.
Yeah.
How long did it take for you to really kind of...
It's been a while. I don't remember. It just kind of sneaks up on you to where... Really? And then you'll look back and be like, oh, yeah, I used to be different. But I don't...
All right, I guess...
Is it a couple years, I guess? Maybe a couple years?
Couple years married or couple years
together?
Couple
years married, I guess.
All right, I guess I got a couple years... of her suffering. Oh, sorry, honey. No, it is weird. It's so strange being. It's. I love having the ring, though.
Yeah,
I do like having the ring.
Do you have family here besides your wife?
No.
Does she?
No.
No, that's good. Just the two of you on this lonely island.
Yeah, although sometimes because my entire family lives in Florida. Like everybody, my brother, my parents, all my cousins, my aunts and uncles, everybody lives within a hour of each other.
Wow.
So it was great growing up down there, but now it's like, oh, everybody's over there. And I'm like, I'm like this one lonely island over here with Alice.
But then when you go there, it's like, wow, my family, there's so many of them.
And then that's when I want to get the fuck out of there, when I realize, oh my God, my whole fucking family's here.
No, where's her family from?
Same place.
Oh, really? Florida?
Oh, yeah. I think I told you this. No. Allison and I, we met out here, but we literally grew up 35 minutes from each other.
That's great. My wife and I are like that.
Really?
We met in L.A., but we grew up, I think, a marathon away from each other, 26.2 miles away.
Wow.
Yeah, her house to my house. Yeah.
No shit.
Yeah.
Did you actually run it? Is that how you knew it was a marathon?
No, I drove it, and I was like, oh, fuck. And my wife used to be a marathon runner.
Oh, funny.
Yeah, so it was just kind of like, you know, she's ran, I think, 3.5 marathons.
That's cool, man. Yeah. That's cool. This is what this podcast is. It's like we get on so many fucking tangents, and like once we stop, we're like, what the fuck were we talking about before they got us here?
But I think about Weird Al Yankovic.
So I was dressing as a fat guy in school was a point of this whole story.
Yeah.
No, I think we were talking about the
opening for bands.
There's something I wanted to ask you. Because you were talking about opening for...
Rick Springfield,
The Dying War...
You opened for John Tesh.
For John Tesh?
Yeah, outdoors, Northern California.
How many people was that?
A couple thousand. But I think some of the people were just... They were annual pass, you know, owners, and they would just show up whoever played. And they were like the drunken redneck on the lake, like, yeah! Others were probably John Tesh fans. And and the same thing, they yelled out something at me, and... You know, and you're just like, okay, just persevere. Oh, and I opened for Eddie Money a couple of years ago.
Really?
Yeah, and that was really a cool gig. It was in Taft, California, which is near Bakersfield.
Mm-hmm.
And it was at the, it was like the 100-year anniversary of that town. I think they call it Beard Days or something like that, or Outlaw Days, or there's some kind of funny name to it. And the men grow beards and don't shave them. And it's it was kind of weird because a lot of people look like ZZ Top out there anyway. So it's kind of like this weird, like, ooh. And then I asked somebody local, I go, They go, you know what? Before I go on, because I think everyone looks kind of weird, and like it's the thing was in the street. They closed a couple of streets down.
And oh, so you were performing in the street?
Yeah,
or like on a makeshift stage.
Like a makeshift stage. It was like a street fair kind of thing, and it's, there was like at least 4,000 people at that one.
Wow.
And they told me that as a joke, they go, you know what TAF stands for? And I go, no, what? And they go, they're all fucking tweaking. I was like, whoa. Because I guess there's like the whole meth thing, and there's like a prison out there and shit. And,
did you open with that?
No, I didn't.
You should have.
I know. I might. Did I? I don't know if I opened, but I did write a lot of jokes that day out there. It was, and they put me up. They didn't have like a, well, maybe they did, but they didn't. I don't think they did. They didn't have like a regular corporate run hotel, so they put me up at some kind of like small town hotel where, you know what I mean? Where you're, it's like the old school, like.
Bed and breakfast kind of thing?
Yeah, kind of, sort of, where you're just like, okay, this is like if they were to shoot a movie, you know, and a guy's on the lam running from the law.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
It'd be that kind. It's not like a, you know, a Hilton or nothing. It was like an old school hotel.
Oh, like a Motel 6 kind of thing.
Sort of,
like,
but not
like
even.
A Bates Motel-ish?
Yeah, but like its own name, like the Taft Historical Inn or something like that. Or, you know. And
I've stayed in a few of those.
Yeah.
I remember one of the nicest yet creepiest places I ever stayed in on the road. I was doing a college, like, in northeast somewhere. I think it was on upstate New York, maybe, not sure. And it was one night, and I'm calling ahead to find a hotel, and apparently they had some kind of big festival, like ice festival in this town or whatever. So like all the hotels were booked, and I got the hold of one guy who had like this bed and breakfast, and I said, yeah, I'll do it, thank you. And I get there, and it's like literally his house.
Oh shit!
It was creepy. It's like walking up it was almost like the Bates Motel with a house up there. I had to walk.
And he's
up.
Trying to make you friendly, but it's coming across as like this guy hitting on me. What's going on?
No, it's just
like,
hey, how you doing?
Come on up, follow
welcome,
me. And this
welcome.
Will be your bed. And the,
yeah, and he takes me up to the attic.
Don't worry about the cameras. You're like, what?
No, the creepiest because it was beautiful. It was beautiful scenery. It was a beautiful house. But at night, I came home from this gig, and I'm walking into this guy's house. At like midnight or something, and like this is weird. And then I go up to my creaky stairs, and then in the attic with like
Scooby Dooby.
It really felt like I was
just.
Where
are you?
Wow!
Like wow, buggy.
Oh, nice convention.
Like I think they're all smoking ice, Scoob.
Where's the dog, the bounty hunter, when you need him?
Listen, we're going back to impressions.
Yeah. So how'd it go? Were you the only guest in the hotel?
I think there might have been one other person. I didn't see anybody else. And then the next morning, I got up real early, and the guy made me breakfast. Very sweet guy.
That's cool.
Yeah. But yeah, that was probably the nicest and creepiest place
I've
ever
stayed. Yeah, I've stayed at a couple of those. When you do those colleges, they do that sometimes.
Yeah.
I stayed at bed and breakfast, and I was like freaked out because my room didn't lock. And they're like, oh, we never have problems. You'll be fine. And you're just like, okay. You're like, weird. And then,
did they ever put you up on campus?
Yeah, that's weird too. Yeah. One time they gave me the key. And I go in and I open the door and there was two college kids smoking weed sitting on my bed, because I guess they also had a key. So I immediately went back and they go, oh sorry bro, we're just because it probably never gets used. And it's like, oh no worries. And I went back, returned the key, and paid out for my own hotel. I said, I'll just get my own hotel.
Oh shit.
Because that way I'll have security.
Yeah, you know? No, absolutely.
So when you're doing colleges, you get a lot, you know, it pays a lot. So it's like, you know, $60 for a room, I'll cover it.
Yeah. No, yeah. I find they do that now. They some colleges, instead of giving you a hotel, they just go, here's $100 in the budget, get your own hotel.
Yeah.
Which usually you can find one for like 80, saying like, hey, I pocketed 20 extra bucks.
All right, I'll go to Denny's in the morning.
Yeah. Gotta love the Denny's.
Do you have any road tips or tricks for when you travel?
I always bring a neck pillow.
Oh.
Like when I'm on the plane.
Uh-huh.
Little tip, always, because especially if you're on longer flights, it gets uncomfortable sitting in those seats. So the neck pillow is always very comfortable to me.
I try to wedge myself up by the window seat. Do you do that? Where you
no, can... I get the aisle.
Oh, you do? That's good.
I love the I like having a little extra. I could stick my leg out in the aisle if I wanted to stretch out a little bit. Yeah. And B, if I got to take a piss, I just get up. I don't have to try to bother somebody, especially if they're sleeping. The only downside is if somebody wants to go to the bathroom.
Or
next
the cart.
To
sometimes the cart hits you in the knee. I've had that happen.
Yeah, I've had that happen, but I'd rather have that than be wedged in and kind of like stuck either in the middle or...
If I get the aisle seat, I'll take a sweatshirt and tie my legs together. That way my knee doesn't like fly open into the aisle.
You tie your legs together?
I do. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Loosely, I mean, I'm not like.
I didn't know you're into that shit, Darren.
I'm into bondage. So starts.
Like it's a plane crash. Well, there were no survivors. Apparently, this guy was having a great time when he went down. It's all tied up.
I saw a picture of a guy. I haven't tried this on a plane. I did it once on the car to see if it would work. And then my wife goes, stop doing it. Our son will learn, you know. But this guy took his belt off, and you make a headband with your belt, and then you tie it to your head, the headrest. That way your head doesn't nod forward when you're falling asleep. So you take the belt, and you kind of tie it around your forehead, and you secure it to the headrest.
Or you just get a neck pillow.
Okay, or you just get a neck pillow.
It's a much easier solution. There's no chance of
I'm taking my belt off, choking myself, tying my legs up.
I can take my... That is... You gotta think about S&M when you're flying, don't you?
Only when I fly, though. It's weird.
I take my belt out. I strap it to my head to the chair. I take my sweatpants. I tie my legs together. I take out some fishing wire and tie my hands to my cock. And then I have some woman next to me. I give her a whip.
I wait for turbulence. Oh, boy. I'm up and down. So would you like something to drink? Yeah, put the napkin in my mouth.
Yeah. Call me a bad passenger.
Yeah.
The neck pillow was the only tip I could think of, not with the that has nothing to do with any other article of clothing strapping around you.
So I've said this on podcasts before, but I think it's helpful. Why not get it out there? If you forget a charger, most hotels have a bunch of chargers that they keep behind the desk from previous guests that have left them behind, and they're not going to go anywhere. So, you know.
No, I never knew. You know what else I do? This is just because I'm anal. I print out labels, like when I have my whenever I book something or I know I have a flight of a trip, even if it's a couple months away, which reminds me, I got to book a ticket. I print out labels, and on each label is like a checklist, like boarding pass, plane ticket, hotel reservations, car rental. Do you need to bring the GPS? And then a little spot for other things, like don't forget CDs and DVDs, T-shirts. You know, you have to call this, whatever. And I take those labels and I stick them on like a regular envelope. And one label is for my trip there. The other one's for my trip back. Mm. And in the envelope, I make sure, like, I print out my boarding pass. It's in there. I check it off. Mm. I have my hotel reservations in the envelope. Check that off. So I have, like, a little checklist on the envelope of things that I might need. And when I have them, I just check them off.
That's good.
So I know I got it all in there.
It's, you know, there's a lot more to just performing on stage. Like, people think it's all fun and games, and that part is awesome, but it's the behind the scenes, like you just said, like having these checklists that make it all come together. I mean, I used to actually have like mild panic when I would get a lot of college gigs, because I'm like, okay, wait a second. Because you get to map it out. Like, how am I going to get from this part of the country to that part of the country to this weird town and this state I've never been in, and rent a car, and the streets are, you know, it's all unfamiliar. And
it can be scary sometimes.
It can be overwhelming.
Very overwhelming.
Okay, Flip, we got you booked. You're going to land in Dallas, Texas. You're going to drive 3 hours to Gun Barrel, Texas, do a one-nighter. From there, you go to Fort Wayne, Indiana, and then shoot down to Fort Smith, Arkansas. And from there, you'll have two nights off and you'll do the New Jersey Turnpike and go into Brooklyn. You're like, fuck, I'm scared. Like, it just sounds...
When I first started and I did, like, a couple of weeks out at a time.
Yeah,
it was a very scary feeling for me, because especially I started when I was so young that
I'd
never really been away from home for an extended amount of time, especially on my own. Especially my parents used to freak out when I first started going on the road,
because I could see that. Yeah,
still in my early 20s, you know.
Yeah,
and but they you know, like, obviously you have to do it. You know, if this is what you want. I remember one of the first road gigs I had, my comedy mentor, I'm not sure if you know Andrew Dorfman. Do you know Drew?
I don't know him, but does he book a room or something?
He books a few rooms. And Brian books Zanies in Nashville, and they both have a piece of the Zanies in Chicago. And he lives in Florida and had a couple of clubs down there.
Cool.
And I remember he specifically got me some shitty road gigs just to kind of indoctrinate me into what it's like to be a road comic. And he goes, if you want to do this, you got to make sure you got the chops for it.
Yeah.
You're going to be alone a lot. You know, you get a lot of driving, a lot of downtime. Yeah. And I'm glad he did, because it really did teach
me. And after
a
while, you learn to like to I love to be alone now, you know.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
It's kind of...
I love being alone with my thoughts on the road sometimes. Yeah. You know, and thank God for iPads or iPods and satellite radio, too.
Right.
Do you remember before that? Remember before?
Oh, yeah.
When you had just like a book of CDs or...
You're stuck with whatever radio on those drives, and especially when you get out into the woods. Like, I remember, because I started in the Bay Area, so I do a lot of gigs in Oregon, Washington, and Idaho. And you know, once you leave San Francisco area, you're just stuck with like either religious music or just like weird, like just pop music that sucks. There might be a good. Yeah, yeah. Well, NPR was good because at least it was talk, you know. And I would listen to AM talk or anything, and you know, I remember some even recently. Like I was driving across Missouri. This is about 4 years ago. When I say recent, it was about 4 or 5 years ago, before I had Pandora and stuff. And I remember being entertained by a radio preacher. You know, it was like it was actually because they kind of have a rhythm of a comedian, and he was talking about. He created this picture in my mind where he goes. He tells the congregation, he said something like, it was a Sunday morning, by the way, I was driving to Kansas City. And he goes, you and your family are in the family room. Upstairs, you hear a noise. You go upstairs, but he drew this thing really out. And he goes, and you open the door, and there's two strangers operating in intercourse. What do you do? What do you do?
Join in.
Yeah, right? And the crowd's kind of laughing, and he goes, you go downstairs, and you probably would call the police, right? You don't want this happening in your home. And I'm like, where's he going with this?
Really?
And he goes, then why do we watch pornography? Why do we invite strangers into our home?
Because they're not in our home.
Yeah.
What the
exactly?
Are you? That was his pitch.
That was his pitch, basically. You know, because the way he did it, like he thought someone broke into the house, and then when his punchline basically was that they're having intercourse and illicit sex, and you know, what do you do? And he's all dramatic, and
that is the stupidest analogy or pitch for anti-porn I've ever heard.
The idea is that you're opening up your computer and then all of a sudden people are just fucking everywhere.
Yeah, it's not like you transport people to fuck in your house. It's on a screen.
Yeah,
they're not messing anything up.
Yeah,
getting caught jerking off—that's a whole other story. But catching two people—that is nothing like watching porn in your house.
Yeah.
That's like going like. If you ever walk into your house and you see two people shooting each other, you'd call the police. Then why would you watch Law and Order SVU dun-dun. In your house?
You like, walk into your home and there's two people opening up a storage facility. Back to your Storage Wars. Was that the one in storage? No, Pawn Stars.
Or Pawn Stars.
That's the one, yeah.
And we're back to full circle.
Honey Boo Boo.
You walk in and you see Honey Boo Boo and her mother. What do you do?
What do you do?
You shoot them.
You shoot them.
I'm not advocating.
No. Yeah, don't do that.
One good thing about Honey Boo Boo,
yeah.
I think, is we'll be able to, I think if it goes on long enough, we can actually pinpoint the moment where she starts becoming a stripper. Like, I think that's the good thing about that in Toddlers in Terror is we can look back going, and how did Honey Boo Boo become a stripper? Well, let's watch early episodes.
You want to know a sad fact? I'm pretty sure, a theory I should say, if... This is how popular she is right now. If they said comedy night, MC, Honey Boo Boo, you know what?
It would sell out.
It would sell out.
That's, you know what? That's so sad but true. Oh my God.
There's a funny comedian that I'll tell you off air. And because I want to get into that Zanies in Nashville just because I love music and I would love to go there.
Mm-hmm.
And so my manager, you know, he wrote them, or he knows Brian Dorfman. And he said, yeah, I want to get Darren Carter in here. And then the guy, because I've never worked for them, they go, well, you know, we'd like to bring him in with another, you know, big act. That way we can guarantee that they'll sell tickets and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And so I recommended another big act, a guy that's, you know, he might even have more credits than me, you know, but whatever.
You don't want to say the name?
No.
Okay.
Well, I mean, I should.
Oh, you don't have to.
Yeah.
I figured somebody you're not going to make fun of. So
no, I'm not going to make fun of. Should I say this? Well, I'll just tell you off the air, I guess.
Okay.
Who is he talking about, everybody?
I know.
This is so exciting.
But, and the guy, he goes, I love him. He referred to the comedian. He goes, I love him. And he even said a nickname, you know, in the email. And then the next email was like, but he doesn't sell tickets. I'm like, fuck. That kind of sucks, huh?
Yeah.
Like,
it's all about numbers now.
Yeah. So it's like Flip Schultz is hilarious. And you could do Skippy Green, Flip Schultz, you know. But then Honey Boo Boo can come in there, and they're going to probably book Honey Boo Boo. Before they'll book Darren Carter and Flip Schultz. And we can't, you know, focus on that, but it's just one of those things.
Tell me if you ever get like this, because, and again, this is something Allison will try
but
to
But that's why we're doing podcasts like this. So thank you guys for listening to this.
Seriously, thank you. I know that...
Let us be your Honey Boo Boo.
Your honey juju.
Honey juju.
The honey juju and gingerhead. Yeah. No, do you ever, like, see, perfect example, the honey boo-boo thing.
Honey juju, you should use that somehow.
Honey, I don't want to ever associate myself with any kind of
that's true.
Thing.
Yeah.
With
yeah, don't. Because then, like, yeah.
Yeah, I really get physically ill when I think about, because what you said is absolutely true. If Honey Boo Boo suddenly, like, I want this comedy or what, it would sell out.
Oh yeah, okay.
And
it would.
And again, I could say a couple names of guys who have no business doing comedy but are going to make money on appearances and taking stage time and weeks away from legitimate comics like you and I have been at it over 20 years and who treat it like art and like a craft. Yeah. I get so, like I said, physically ill when I think about that. And I think about how tough it is for, I'm speaking for myself, how tough it is to keep maintaining bookings. Even at clubs that I've been working for years, suddenly they're like, well, you know, I could bring in, you know, fucking Steve-O from Jackass and he'll sell out five shows, or I could bring you in and, you know, maybe I could paper the room and bring people. And it's like, don't you give a shit about the entertainment value anymore? Don't you give a shit that... just a name, it's gonna, if they don't do a good show, which I'm sure they won't, and I'm just saying this knowing that it's gonna tarnish your reputation, and you might make money on them that first time, but you're gonna lose people who legitimately want to. I think if people give them the choice, do you want to see somebody famous for an hour and a half or 45 minutes try, or do you want to see somebody who might not know but who guarantee you're gonna laugh your ass off? That's what a comedy club is supposed to be,
right?
And it's just I hate saying that I feel bitter about it, but I do, man. It's like somebody. It's like
I know you don't want to because you know it's not healthy. By the way, just so you know, I do have to get out of here.
Oh yeah, well, it's okay because we're about ready to wrap up. So,
but you're right. There's this feeling. I'll tell you. I had a I recently did Miami, and it was like that where Steve-O had just been there, and like the staff is you know, most of them are probably like under 30, and they had like I guess he had signed a kitchen knife. Like, as he balances a knife on his chin or something, and they were glowing about it, like how awesome it was, and it was kind of like, like fuck.
Well, you know? Did he poop on stage and eat it and eat it, and then was that the closer?
I know. It's like
whatever. And I hate.
But it's just the nature of show business. I know.
I hate to end on such a bitter note.
Can I tell you a joke I read in Reader's Digest that was funny?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Let's play along. So the guy goes. I'm going to involve you at the end.
Right.
The guy goes in the ice cream store and he goes, yeah, can I get a chocolate? I'm like, sorry, we're out of chocolate. Oh, okay. Can I get a, let me get a bowl of vanilla with a little bit of chocolate on top. Sir, we're out of chocolate. Oh, okay. Can I have a strawberry with some chocolate? Sir, we're out of chocolate. And the guy just loses his mind. He goes, listen, do you see that sign? It says strawberry. Do you see a straw in strawberry?
No.
No, you do.
Oh, well, yes, I see a straw.
Okay.
Sorry. I thought you meant a literal straw, like
a
straw.
Yeah.
No, okay, that's the word straw. Yes, I see a straw. And
remember
straw,
improv? Yes, and.
Yes, and. Sorry.
Do you see straw in strawberry?
Yes, I do.
Do you see van in vanilla?
Yes, I do.
Do you see, over here, do you see frick in the word chocolate?
No.
That's right. There's no frickin' chocolate. That's what I've been trying to tell you.
By the way, I like how on an audio podcast you looked one way and went, no, I should be looking back this way. Like, nobody would know.
Yeah.
Before we get out of here,
that's my acting training.
Before we get out of here, very quickly,
yes,
it is time for the Skippy Green Show.
Okay, let's do it.
It's the Skippy Green Show.
Darren, how are you?
Fantastic. DarrenCarter.com.
Darren Carter. We're getting there. Don't pre-plug.
Sorry.
Don't plug too soon.
Sorry.
Women are not going to forget that. If you plug too soon, they're going to make fun of you.
Can I ask you a quick question?
No.
Okay, sorry.
Here we go.
Did Flip use soap? Okay, sorry.
Did Flip use soap?
Yeah.
Only up until he was 16. Then he realized you don't really need lube, just a couple strokes. All right, you ready, Darren?
Yeah.
I think you remember this drill. I'm going to ask you a question. You got to answer
okay.
in 10 words exactly.
10 words exactly.
Not 11, not 9, 10 words.
10 words exactly.
Okay. Here we go.
Yes.
If you had your choice to fuck Steve-O and drag or Honey Boo Boo in 12 years, who would it be and why?
I would fuck Honey Boo Boo in 12 years with Steve-O.
That is the most weirdest homoerotic answer I think I've ever
heard. I was trying to say with Steve-O's dick, but that would have been 11 words.
And that would have been silly.
Yes.
Just with Steve-O there.
I thought 10 words was too much, but then when I actually did it, I'm like, God, that's not enough. Sorry, Mr. Green.
As well you should be. But I think we've all learned a lot about you today, Darren.
Yes.
So in 12 years, look forward to the new spinoff, Honey Boo Boo and the Ginger Fuck.
Darren, always a pleasure, not just having you on the podcast, but hanging out with you.
Dude, likewise, man.
You're one of the funniest guys I know and one of the sweetest. And, of course, people can check you at DarrenCarter.com. What are your other plugs?
Twitter at Darren Carter. I got up my own podcast called The Dick and Darren Show.
Which I've been on many times.
You're
and
always
it's hilarious.
A
it's
and
a
Darren,
good time.
Dick and Darren.
Dick
yes.
and Darren.
Yeah.
Was that essay or at the beginning of that?
Oh, get your jollies.
Get your jollies.
Dong.
And you have any shows coming up within the next week? This week?
What am I doing? I'm all around town. I think I'm at the Ice House this Friday in Pasadena.
That's Friday the...
whatever that Friday is.
That would be Friday the 14th.
Yeah, I'll be there. And I'm going to be... I have a ton of dates coming up. Just come
check it all at DarrenCarter.com.
Twitter and Facebook and all that.
Excellent. And
Thank you.
No problem. And of course, guys, you know, you can check me out at flipisfunny.com, facebook.com/flipschultz2, Twitter at flipschultz. You can always get the podcast at whatsfordinnerpodcast.com, iTunes, Stitcher. And if you're around this week... September 14th through the 18th, me and Allison will be doing a nice Northern California tour. We'll be at the Federally Playhouse in Vallejo on Friday the 14th at Bistro 33 City Hall Tavern in Davis on the 15th. And I will be performing as part of Comedy Day in San Francisco, everybody.
Woo.
That's right, under the Golden Gate Bridge on Sunday the 16th. I believe I'm on the third show. You can go to their website for details. And on Tuesday the 18th, I will be at the Throckmorton Theater in Mill Valley, California. And then on Wednesday the 19th, I'll be at the Laugh Factory in Long Beach. So a bunch of dates coming up this week. Check it out at flipisfunny.com.
There's a chance that you and I might be working together at the Ontario Improv.
That's right.
Right before Thanksgiving.
Yes, right before Thanksgiving, the week of November 14th, I think you said. But you can always check Darren and my Darren and my website for confirmation of that. But either way, go see Darren in Ontario that week. Even if not with him, you will not regret it. It's going to be a great show. And as always, guys, thank you so much for listening. I love each and every one of you. Thank you for your unwavering and constant support and love.
And give him some comments on his podcast.
That's you know what?
You
I would love some more.
Give it five stars and say something nice.
Right now we got...
Would it hurt, guys?
All the ratings are 5, but we only have 5 comments, so I would love to have some more. Just to make me feel special. I love you guys again, and I will see you next week. Thank you again, Darren Carter. Bye!
You got it, guys. Bye!